Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I miss you a lot. It's been long enough. Can we talk? I don't want to give up on love.
What can I say? The one, the only, the voice, Mr. Lenny Williams in the house. Lenny, a very good afternoon to you, sir. How's the wife and the family?
Everybody's good. Everybody's good. Everybody's just, you know, biding our time like everyone else and, you know, just kind of waiting until we get out of this coronavirus situation.
That tune sounded pretty good. That's the first time I've heard it. Of course, I've been in the closet a bit before.
No, it hasn't even been released yet. You're the first person to ever play it on the radio. And it's not going to be released until April 15th. And so you're the man.
All right, Godfather, thank you so much. What's the name of the tune?
It's called Say So.
Wow. So this is is this going to be, are you doing stuff on your own label now? I mean, how are you doing that?
Yeah, I'm doing it on my own label, and, you know, it's fairly easy to do, and you're in complete control, which could be a good thing or maybe not so good thing, you know, you know, it's just convenient, and, you know, big record companies aren't signing a lot of people, and they definitely aren't signing a lot of artists, you know, in my age group, so, you know, do you just say I'm washed up or I'm going to make this happen. So, you know, just a little American ingenuity and you make it happen.
Okay, but you used to tour regularly, and I mean, you've got a good following. I mean, every time I go to one of your shows, we're standing somewhere. We're standing up.
Oh, yeah. I'm touring all the time. Matter of fact, I just had about 20 shows get canceled due to the coronavirus, you know, so we're at home, you know, just like I said, you know, like all of everybody else. But, you know, then we just started working on new music and, you know, getting ready to put that out. Yeah.
How do you write a song? I mean, how do you write? What makes you, I mean, what brings about a song? Does it come with one little line and then you work off that? How do you do it?
Well, it comes a lot of different ways. Sometimes you'll get a melody or sometimes, you know, you'll be in a situation. I've got this song that it's called I'm Sorry I Didn't Know It Was Your Mama. And we were at a gig one night and we took a break. And we passed the band, and we were going to the dressing room, and we saw this table full of beautiful ladies, and one of the guys in the band, you know, wanted to introduce himself and holler at the girls, and I guess he said something that kind of like tweaked one of the ladies the wrong way, and she says, "I don't appreciate you talking to her like that. That's my mama." And he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know it was your mama." And so we got to the dressing room, and we were talking about it, and it's like, hey, the mama had more tattoos than anybody, had the tongue ring, and he was, you know, dropping it like it was hot. And so I wrote the song, I'm Sorry I Didn't Know With Your Mama. Yeah, you know, so different things, you know, can, you know that can cause you to write a song. Yeah.
Okay, you know, back, people thought you started with Tower of Power, but you actually had an album before Tower of Power, solo, didn't you?
Well, I actually had a couple of singles. Yeah, right. I did.
Singles?
My first song I wrote myself. The second song, John Fogerty wrote for me. Then I went to Atlantic and I put out a couple of songs. Well, I think maybe just one song at Atlantic, and then I got with Tower Power. Yeah, so I put about three or four singles out before I was with Tower Power. Yeah,
you gotta give John Fogerty some props here because he wouldn't sing those songs he wasn't getting paid for. I was down with him on that. Some people said to me, "Oh, I don't think that's cool." No. He wasn't getting paid. I mean, he got pimped off for decades.
Yeah, John was. You know, he. You know, we kind of started out together, him and I, Huey Lewis, and, you know, back in those days, you know, you just basically gave up all your publishing. And the first song that I wrote, I gave up all my publishing. And then one night, just before I was in Tower Power, I was hanging out with Larry Graham and Neil Sean and all those guys. They were all hanging out. And some people came up from New York and Los Angeles, and they were, you know, trying to find some new talent. And so I met this young lady, and she was saying, yeah, people are talking about you. Do you write songs? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, well, do you have your own publishing? And I was like, no. And she told me how to go down to the courthouse and file a fictitious business license and have my own publishing. So I was very fortunate and blessed that I learned about it. But guys like John, people like that, they didn't realize that, you know, that you could go down and you could control your own publishing. And, you know, so for years, all those great songs that he wrote, he didn't get, you know, get didn't get the publishing royalties from it and wasn't able to control his songs. But, you know, they have new laws now that you can go back and recapture that. And so I'm sure he's done that.
You know, some of the places I've been around the world just sort of stand out. Budapest, Hungary, Cali, Colombia, Beijing, China. You've been all over the world. You travel more than me. What places stand out in Lenny Williams' mind worldwide?
Oh, boy. I mean, I really like Great Britain. I went to South Africa, Spain. It's so many beautiful places in the world. Actually, I was scheduled to go to Portugal next month, but that's not going to happen. I've never been there, and I'd kind of like to go there and just see, you know, the beautiful countryside and for that great food, for sure. Yeah.
You know, some people knock me for this is my, but this is the way I feel. And I stole this line, of course, from the great Nelson Mandela. Quote, "I never lose. I either win or learn." End of quote. You met him, didn't you?
I did get a chance to meet him. I went over to his daughter, Zinzi, and she was also the daughter I can't think of his wife's name right now, but invited us over for a jazz festival and took us over to their homeland and everything and introduced us to her dad. And it was just a great, great experience.
You know, Larry Merchant was on an hour in the morning. Of course, the retired HBO godfather, 89 years old, no, a boxing, I mean, a journalist to Hall of Famer. And he told me of all the stuff he did in his entire life. Okay. That Mandela interview stands out.
I can just imagine. So, I mean, he made a great sacrifice for freedom and maintained his dignity and also was a guy that didn't experience or didn't hold on to bitterness. And I think that was the thing that kind of set him apart from everybody.
I got a question for you. It's out of left field. I used to get called the N-word when I was a kid. I grew up in the 60s. I didn't dig it. My father told me you needed to throw down when that was said. And with my black friends, it was the same thing. And then all of a sudden it became socially acceptable to an extent. How did they bastardize that word?
Well, I think that I think the young kids kind of want to clean it up and, you know, they want to make it like the word has no sting to it. And so I remember my uncle when I was younger used to say it all the time, and my mother would always say, "Don't say that." And he said, "Oh, those kids gonna hear that. Those kids gonna hear that." And I was like maybe 4, 5, 6 years old. I remember distinctly, you know, my uncle, who's kind of one of my favorite uncles, he would say it all the time. And so a lot of people look at it as a term of endearment, you know, and then, among your friends, and it's just basically the connotation. I think it is the connotation that comes with it. I mean, I could say to you, you know, "Man, you're getting on my nerve," you know, and it's just kind of like, you know, two buddies talking. And if I say, "You're getting on my nerve," you know, it's it has another connotation. It's, you know, it's almost like, hey, you know, we're getting ready to fisticuff. And so, I think it's the connotation. And, you know, some people are never going to, you know, it's African-Americans, you know, some of them are never going to stop saying it, you know, use it as a term of endearment. And then I guess other people say, "Well, why can't we say it?" And, you know, it's just going to be, you know, it's just going to be a big quandary for everybody as far as, you know, I read something the other day that said, "Oh, it's the worst word in the English dictionary." And I think it's just basically the connotation and the historical perspective, you know, of the word.
Well, some guy introduced me on stage about 4 or 5 months ago at a club, and he said I was his favorite N. And it's sort of like, you know, I mean, I grabbed the mic and I didn't show the uncomfortability because, you know, you're in public, isn't that? But I felt the uncomfortability. Maybe, am I just an old man now? Is that it?
Well, it may be. I mean, I was at somewhere over at the car show over at the Cow Palace, and I went to the men's room. And there, you know, some young guys there, you know, that weren't African American, you know, and they're like, "Hey, what's up, my, you know?" And did you see that, you know? And but you know, the word has become so generic, you know. And at first, I was offended, you know, but then I was like, "Wow, you know, they hear it in the rap music, and I understand that they, you know, the connotation was a negative." And so, you know, you just kind of learn to live with it. When I was counseling over in San Francisco, I remember I had a young a guy on my caseload who was Native American, and he came in and he was like, "Man, I don't have to stay too long, do I, Mr. Williams?" And I was like, "Well, what's going on?" He says, "Oh man, I got my Ian with me, and we got to go somewhere and take care of something." So I talked to him for a few minutes, and I walked him out in the hall to where his friend was, and his friend was a young white guy, and it's like, I immediately called my wife. I said, "You'll never guess what happened. I had that, American Indian kid, Native American kid in there," and he said, "Man," as soon as he walked in, "Oh, Ms. Williams, man, I can't stay too long today. Me and my aunt has got to go somewhere, and is it cool?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And then I had a little short session with him, walked him out in the hallway, and here was, this young blue-eyed, blonde-haired white boy, And so it's like, hey, it is what it is, yeah.
The great Lenny Williams on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. The studio text line, this is how it's happening, 415-275-1613. The number, once again, 415-275-1613. You're tuned to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.
Way. I wish I may, I wish I might make you my all-star shining bright. I know I can feel it. This time is real. Other girls that I had were fine, but they were mainly just to pass the time. Though I must confess I had some fun.
Here's a great way to save money on your prescription medications. If you take Viagra or Cialis, we can give you a way to pay as little as $2 a pill. Compare that to prices as high as $60 per tablet. These pills work for men and women to improve their sexual performance. And now for the price of two or three pills, you can get nearly 100. There's no need to pay expensive prices for Viagra or Cialis. Call now with your prescription and pay as little as $2 a pill. We offer 24/7 service and always free delivery in confidential packaging. Change your life for the better and have fun. Call Pharmacy Shop 24/7 to get generic versions of Viagra or Cialis for as little as $2 a pill, plus free discreet shipping.
800-709-4409. 800-709-4409. 800-709-4409. That's 800-709-4409.
I'm going to tell you how you can get real healthcare for as little as $6 a day. Yes, now you can get affordable healthcare for you and your family immediately and save as much as 50% off your current monthly healthcare payments. Our plans are perfect for people that are self-employed, can't afford health benefits where they work, or just want to pay less for their current healthcare. And coverage is guaranteed regardless of your medical condition. We even offer some of the new Christian faith-based health benefits. Save up to 50% on your family's health care. Make a free quick call now. There are no contracts, and we give you a 10-day money-back trial period. Call Provision Enrollment right now for your risk-free guaranteed health insurance quote starting at $6 a day.
800-472-5145. 800-472-5145. That's 800-472-5145.
Progressive presents Get Pumped, inspiration to help you do insurance stuff.
Hey, are you just gonna stand there and let people not give you credit for being a good driver? You deserve discounts on car insurance, and that's what Snapshot from Progressive is for. So why aren't you signing up? You need music to get pumped? Hit it! Drum solo! Ow, that hurts my fingers.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Snapshot not available in California, North Carolina, or from all agents.
Here comes the decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Who's done it? We have a new heavyweight champion in the world.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Clap your hands, sir. Stop being racist. Clap your hands.
The Million Seller. Lenny, is this the one that'll be sending kids to school for a couple of generations or what?
Hello?
Lenny, is this a song that'll send kids to school for a couple of generations?
Yes, yes, that song has just been, oh man, it has been awesome. It's been, hey, it's, you know, it's just given me a platform to do my music and to, you know, just, you know, be able to sing all the other songs that I've sang. People always say to me, I love your song. Like, you know, like that's the only song I ever done, you know, but, it's just been an awesome blessing to me and my family for sure.
But Steve Harvey loved it.
Oh yeah, he did. Yeah, and he talked about it in the Kings of Comedy and in his comedy routines. And so every time I see Steve, I got to give him a big old hug and let him know how much I appreciate him. Yeah, he was a very he gave my career a great shot. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. You know, when I was after I left the police department, I was a bit confused and hadn't went to work as far as going on the road TV wise. But I was working in the early '90s as a school teacher in a jail in the San Francisco County Jail system. And I was teaching school, and I was also writing in a newspaper that we had there. And I was of the opinion, I was looking at boxing, I was looking to shake things up a little bit. So I wrote a story that I brought in a that I did in a magazine a few years earlier, that I thought Joe Louis was a bit of an Uncle Tom. I said, you know, he stayed at hotels where black people couldn't stay, stuff like that. But I will give him some props when he did those exhibitions. He made sure that black military men were and military women were allowed to see his exhibitions. But you know, I just thought he did. I was of the opinion maybe that he didn't do enough, because I know Jack Johnson might have pushed the envelope a little bit too far, a little bit too fast. But did Joe Louis not? Did he not seize the opportunity after the Schmeling fight to really do something?
Well, you know, a lot of times I look at different things. I looked at history and how people, you know, get involved. And you know, I would have opinions about people, maybe W.E.B. Du Bois or Booker T. Washington, and how they did things differently. And then some people, you know, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, and people say, well, this person was an Uncle Tom, or this person, you know, was you know the way that they wanted to do it was wrong. And I've just kind of come to the conclusion that that everybody's kind of got to walk their own walk, you know. I have a friend of mine that's a very successful African American, and you know, he don't look at himself as being black. You know, he looks at himself as just being a man, and you know, that's and that's the way he lives his life. You know, he realizes that, hey, you know, if he was walking down the streets, in a certain neighborhood or something like that at 12 or 1 o'clock at night, that you know he might. You know, people might look at him funny and things like that. He understands all that, but when he's dealing with other people that has opportunities to date or to, you know, choose his friends or circumstances, he just looks at himself as a man. And so, you know, I just kind of like say to each his own, and you know, and it kind of lets people know that, you know, that you don't have to follow the herd, so to speak. You know, you can be a Republican, you can be a Democrat, you can be independent, you can be for Trump, you can not be for Trump. You know, and I think that, you know, well, you know, people, you know, I think that just like every other American, everybody can do their own thing. You know, we're free to do our own thing. Yeah, so I kind of look at it like that. You know, but I mean, I had that same opinion back in the day, but, you know, as I get older, I just kind of look at it and say, hey, you know, every man for himself and God for us all, in a way, you know.
You know, Lenny Williams, our guest, you know, Lenny, but I'm not worried about people looking at me funny in the neighborhood. I'm worried about, about the Trayvon Martins of the world. That's what sort of concerns me in 2020, that, you know, long after the Civil Rights Act has been passed, we're supposed to all be equal, this and that, yet a kid can be killed because he has some Skittles?
Yeah, that, you know, those things like that, you know, I mean, I have grandsons, you know, and I have sons and I have grandsons, and, you know, you're concerned about that for sure, you know, and you just have to, I was looking on Facebook today and I was watching, you know, some things people post about police actions and, you know, a police officer stopped somebody and tell them, you know, put your hands behind your back, and then why, you know, what did I do? And it's like, hey, you know, sometimes you got to do what you, you know, you got to follow the orders. You know, I think that's what you should do, you know. And then, but a kid like Trayvon Martin being somewhere, I mean, I live in a gated community and my grandson comes over here sometime and, you know, the majority of the people here, 95% are, you know, are non-African American. And I'm pretty sure that if my grandson, who's 17, was walking around in here, maybe because I never saw him or whatever. And, you know, he may be suspicious of him. And so, you know, those are things that are concerning. But I think that, you know, you just have to teach kids how to react to those things. You know, like when my boys were growing up and their friends were smoking weed, and I would say, well, if you don't want to smoke weed, what do you do? You know, maybe you could tell them, hey, my dad is a probation officer and he tests me once a week and I can't do it. I mean, so you have a strategy to get out of, you know, certain predicaments, you know. And so I think that sometimes you have to have role play with kids to teach them about, situations that may come up so that they know how to deal with it. I guess Trayvon, you know, from what he was saying on the phone with his girlfriend, this guy's following him and he's thinking, you know, that this guy's going to do him some harm. And, the guy was suspicious of him. And maybe, you know, it could have worked out a different way. But, you know, I guess, obviously they didn't have any role play around that, I don't think. Or if he did, maybe, you know, fight or flight, you know, you don't, all those things get thrown out the window. So, it's something that you think about, but you just hope that it never comes to your doorstep. And you just hope that, you know, that people come together that, aren't suspicious. I mean, I could be suspicious. I could say, hey, if I saw a white guy, could he be, a Ku Klux Klanner or a white citizen council guy or whatever, you know, a Nazi because of a historical perspective of race in the United States. But, you know, I try not to do that. I try to give everybody a fair shake. And so you just never know. You know, it's a hard thing. It's just a hard thing. It's a sad thing. And I just hope at some point in time, you know, that we don't have those issues. That's the only thing I can say about that right now. Yeah.
Favorite boxer of all time, Lenny Williams?
Woo! I would have to say Floyd Mayweather.
Ooh. Okay. Senior or junior? I'm just kidding.
I know he just lost his Uncle Roger too, just a few days ago too. Yeah, right. But I know I like Floyd. I think, you know, I mean, he never lost. You know, I mean, he came close a couple of times. You know what I mean? But he never lost. Yeah, right. And so, you know, it'd be the same thing. Like, somebody might say, well, who's the best heavyweight champion? Well, Marciano never lost. You know, he came close once or twice. I think was it Ezra Charles or Walcott or one of those guys?
Walcott and Charles both stretched.
I like Floyd. You know, I mean, you know, he seems like he got out of it with, you know, with cognitive, he still got all of his senses and, he made lots of money, his prize fighting. And, so I would have to say to me that, you know, he's cocky, you know, you gotta be cocky, you know. Some people felt like he was, excessively cocky. But I guess, you know, when you're in there and it's war, you know, you feel like those guys fighting, flying those, B-52 bombers, in over Germany, they had to be cocky, you know what I mean? Flying those, fighter planes and stuff like that. So, I don't know. So, I know a lot of my friends are, oh man, why you say Floyd? You know, why not Muhammad Ali or whomever, but or Ray Leonard or Duran or somebody like that. But I like him. Yeah.
That's funny because I got to be around both Duran and Leonard, and I spent some time with Floyd earlier in his career, both when he was an amateur. I watched him lose that last amateur fight over in Oakland, California. He lost in the Olympic trials back in 1996. And he had a nervous breakdown. He was crying, and I wish there was videotapes back then and then because he wouldn't want that one servicing. But he came back. He won in the box off. Of course, he went on and won the Olympic bronze medal. He went on to a 49-50-0 record. You got to give him some props. But back to Marciano just for a second. You brought up the fact Marciano retired undefeated. Man, if Marciano ever dreamed about beating Sonny Liston, he better wake up and apologize, let alone the rest of those guys, because Sonny was waiting. Sonny was waiting, and Rocky knew it. That's why he retired.
You think so? Yeah. You know, it's interesting about boxing, you know, I mean, like the Wilder fight and Tyson, you know, it's like everybody, you know, Wilder won all those fights with power, and it's like, you know, people, you know, I understand that people call it the, you know, that boxing is a combat sport. But when I like to think about boxing, I think of it as the sweet science, you know. And, if, you know, if you, you know, you've got a good teacher, good trainer, and you look, you know, and you look at boxing as a science the same way you would look at, you know, geometry or, you know, trigonometry and, or, you know, things like that, you know, that's how you excel in boxing. And, you know, that's why Tyson, you know, won the fight, because, you know, he employed science and Wilder employed, power. And I think that the science of boxing always gonna win out over power, if you look at it, and I guess if you get a clinical study of it.
You are tuned in the Mighty Sports Byline Broadcast Network. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look in the world of boxing and MMA. Now let's talk about this new album record. How do you release music nowadays in 2020?
Well, there's a young guy over in San Francisco, Gazi, and he worked for big record companies, and then he kind of got his own idea. He was ahead of the curve to release records, digitally, and that's what everybody does now. It's all digital. You know, you can hardly find new CDs, and so I deal with him, and I do my music, and then I go and they have a dashboard, and I've got to upload it, which I'm taking the credit for, but my wife does it. It's like, hey, honey, can you help me? And I have to be real nice and all that stuff, and she puts it all up there, and then we get a release date, and boom, it's there. And then I print up CDs too, so when I go on the road, people might want CDs, and I have those too. And so then we put it up, and then they distribute it to Spotify and to Apple Music and all the digital platforms, and people hear it, and it gets on the radio and digital radio stations and terrestrial radio stations, and they go and purchase it and download it on their various devices, and hopefully you get a royalty check, or somebody calls you up and say, hey, I want you to come to Cleveland, Ohio, and sing this song. It's hitting over here. Yeah, so it's a whole new ball game.
You know, your lifetime partner and your wife, every time I see her, she says, call me Debbie, but I refer to her as Mrs. Williams. This is a little added respect there. You understand that, right?
I appreciate that. Yes, sir. That's old school. Yeah.
That is old school. Anyway,
coming from a young guy, old school. Yes, right. Yeah.
Oh, man. Anyway, thank you so much. Hey, so what's happening in the dog world? Do you ever get another dog?
We do have a little dog, Blossom. And she's I can't even think of what she is, but a little tiny dog. But right now she's at our daughter's house because our daughter doesn't have a partner right now. And so she's like, hey, Mom, Dad, can I have Blossom over here with me to keep me company while I'm all locked up in the house? And so Blossom's been over there for about 3 weeks now. Yeah.
So who was the dog that I met, the dog that was so famous? Who was the famous dog?
The famous dog of what now?
The famous dog you had that passed away about a couple of years ago. Because I'm big in the dog. What was that dog's name?
Oh, yeah, that was, oh, my God. What was his name? I'm looking at the picture. Debbie's got it right here. Max. Max. Yeah, Max. Yeah.
Okay. I will leave you with that. Max, say hello to Mrs. Williams for me. I love you, man. It's been great. We've known each other since 74, and you've always been a class act, Mr. Williams.
We appreciate you too. Your support and everything like that, and we don't take it for granted for sure. Yeah.
This is Say So by the great Lenny Williams.
I miss hearing your voice. Do you miss me still? And did you have a choice? Been on pause the whole time. Resume, don't press rewind. Yeah.
I hid my heart away, hoping you would find it one day. Prefer to keep the hold rather than just let it go. I hid my love away,